Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from this Upward Sports studio. Have you ever compared yourself unfavorably to someone else? Well, today's story gives us some insight into maybe why that shouldn't happen. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on looking for opportunity. I think sometimes we miss opportunity because we're not looking for it. And we're going to talk about that. And then joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. We're going on the road next week.
We are. These next couple of weeks is going to be fun, aren't they?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You've taken the podcast on the road before to see some other people, but we're going to see a couple of churches and really dig into the church model, which is really taken off. We were just talking about that before we went live, how the church model is just taken off. We've got lots of coaches coming on this fall, lots of churches leading the 5K challenge in their community, and it's really cool to see. So we're going to go get some content to talking about just that, because we want everybody listening to consider doing this in their community this fall, this winter, maybe in January or whenever you like. That's the great thing about the 5K challenge. You can start at any time of year.
Yep.
Running really doesn't have a season, right?
That's right.
Even though we try to put it in a season sometimes,
we do.
It doesn't have a season.
Yep, that's true.
It's a year-round sport.
It is. Yep. And you'll learn more about that over the next couple of weeks. And I think you're going to hear some great stories in connection with that, too. It's not just going to be an advertisement.
No.
It's going to be some neat stories along the way.
That's testimonials.
Absolutely.
Hey, before we get started, I mentioned last week that I talked about my good friend Eldon, who came to know Christ.
Mm-hmm.
He was not doing well. Well, he passed away last night.
So
just want to kind of update everybody. Prayers going out for the Hasty family. But Eldon, he accepted Christ just 2 weeks ago, so we know where he's at now. He's up there with his wife, and so just prayers go out to that whole family in that situation. But there's peace in knowing where he's at.
Amen. Well, let me give an update on something that I talked about, I think, last week. You know, I bought these new shoes. Mm. I have some new shoes.
I heard Holly asking about your shoes.
Yeah.
They must be flashy.
Yeah, everybody likes the way they think they're sharp. I got the same thing at church last night. But my VO2 max, ever since I put these shoes on, you look at my chart of my VO2 max, and it's like it's kind of even, and then all of a sudden, it goes straight up. It's the craziest thing. And so yesterday, I did this workout on the track yesterday, and it required some sprinting, some really fast running.
Mm-hmm.
And I have trouble with those because I get some lasting effects from those, particularly hamstrings and glutes. Well, normally my problem is in my left side. All of my problems are always on my left side. Well, yesterday after that, I actually cut the workout a little bit short because I was having trouble with my right side. And let me tell you why I think that is. I think these shoes have made it where my running form is better and I'm not running. I think I've been running kind of lopsided, more on my left than my right, and I think I'm more even now. Can you believe a pair of shoes could do that? I mean, I may be wrong. This may all change in the next week or two, but
so before you started, did you get your pixie dust out and kind of sprinkle it on?
No, but I ordered another pair of these things yesterday.
They've hooked you, right?
They have, absolutely.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, they say one of the injuries that runners have to be concerned about is injuries from favoring an injury. And then the injury going away, and then the injury plopping over to the other side.
Yep.
Because you've straightened in. It sounds like that's kind of what's happened.
That's what's happening. But I'm being cautious with it, and so I'm not going to push it too hard. But I'm hoping that what's happening is my right side's getting stronger, and it'll catch up, and everything will be nice and even, and I'll be better than I've been in a couple of years.
Hmm.
That's my goal.
That's interesting.
Got a big race coming up in a month.
There's a 20-minute conversation can go into that right there. But
yeah, you're not kidding.
We won't go there.
Yeah, yeah. Our post of the week this week is a little bit different and odd from what we normally have. It comes from Bill Silvers. Bill Silvers, if you remember, is the older fella who has run in some big championship races and has done well. And it says, attention, all mothers, wives, daughters, and sisters. And it says, do you know the PSA, which stands for prostate-specific antigen number, of the men in your life? If not, you should. And this goes on to talk about the PSA number. Mm-hmm. And that's a number that you and I know because we just had test run for this. But I bring it up because a lot of times when we talk about health on here all the time, we don't just talk about running and walking and that kind of fitness, but all the other health-related things that go with it. And this is one of those things. And he talks about how in February 2009, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I turned to God for guidance, and he led me to the care of Dr. Cleveland. He recommended radioactive iodine prostate seed implants along with radiation 5 days a week for 7 weeks. By June 2009, I was cancer-free, and to this day, I remain cancer-free. Thank you, God. To God be the glory. The point is that he knew what his number was, and he found out. And as men are horrible, and I'm counting myself in this group, really horrible about getting to a doctor and getting these things measured. But I remember back when I was in my corporate days, you know, we used to talk about how if you want to improve something, you got to measure it.
Sure.
Things that don't get measured don't get improved.
Right.
And this is one of those things. If you don't know your PSA number, I can tell you exactly what mine is right this minute because I had it tested. And that's unusual for me.
Yeah.
But, it's just a reminder. And if you're, and listen, it's not just a man thing. There are some women who don't do a good job at it. And there are some men who do a good job with it. But we've got a friend of ours right now that just went through surgery.
Sure.
And that was because he's pretty good at keeping up with his stuff. So if you're in that boat and you don't know your numbers and you don't, especially once you get past 40.
Yeah.
You really need to know these things.
Yeah, and we don't have any affiliation, and we're not sponsored by, but the company that you and I have both used is a company called Function Health.
Yep.
It's an organization by Dr. Mark Hyman, who both you and I listen to his podcast. But it's really cool because, I mean, it's several thousands of dollars worth of testing that you get for just a few hundred dollars. And I mean, I just pulled mine up because I'd forgot about it. I pulled up my PSA number and it's 0.2. You know, anything above 4, you need to be concerned about. And it sounds like our good friend that we're talking about, he was just above that number.
His was 8.
And he was able to go to his doctor and say, hey, you know, and this is not throwing off on doctors, but we're responsible for our own health.
That's right.
And today it's so easy to get this kind of like the Function Health, a few hundred dollars. And I had, there's so much data on this website that I'm looking at about my body that will just make your eyes cross.
Yeah.
But it flags the things that are of concern. And I have several things on here that are of concern that I'm working on. I said, we'll go over it in December when I get my next round of test, kind of my health journey. But yeah, I mean, take agency over your own health. It will, let me say this, it will make you live a healthier lifestyle when you take agency of it.
Absolutely.
It's almost like, you know, growing up, you know, I had to pay for my first truck. And my dad understood that if he paid for it, I would not take care of it near as much as if I paid for it. That's agency.
Yep.
I think that's agency. Maybe I'm using that word wrong.
Oh, I think
but
that's good.
But you get my point. Mm-hmm. If you take agency over your health, I saw that my cholesterol was high. I did this myself. I went and did it. And guess what I'm doing now? I'm trying to get that number where if I didn't know, again, you said it, the things that don't get measured don't get improved. So
that's right.
It's just a challenge.
Yeah.
You can go to functionhealth.com. I'm sure there's other organizations out there that do the same thing. They're the most simple one that we found. But however you do it, just do it, because this is something that can easily be, as we say in the South, you can nip this in the bud
yeah,
if you catch it
right.
early.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. And One of the favorite, my favorite thing about Function Health is not just knowing your numbers, but they give you very specific. They tell you, here's the foods that you should eat.
Practical.
These are the
things.
Foods that you should avoid.
Right.
And they and here's supplements that would help you, and here's supplements that you should avoid. And it's great.
And here's the thing. They're not selling supplements.
That's right. That's a good point.
That's a good thing. That's one thing you got to look for with some of these organizations is, well, they're recommending supplements, and they give you a link to the other side of their website to go buy these supplements. They don't do that.
Yep.
They're just saying, hey, you need vitamin D.
Yep.
Wherever you want to buy it, you go buy it wherever you want, but this is what you need. So it seems to be very arm's length in their strategy, and it just provides an extra layer of trust.
Absolutely. My favorite thing is it tells me that I need to eat more tomatoes. Well, I love tomatoes.
Really?
So that doesn't bother me a bit.
Yeah.
Our run of the week comes from Richard Ball. He's getting back to it. He says, good night for a run. Much needed. Legs were sore from the previous run, but not painful. Running is a great way for me to process my thoughts and the day in general. Grateful to run. I think this is an underrated thing about running and or walking, or really maybe any physical exercise. You know, I mentioned I had a hard time after the whole Charlie Kirk thing. I mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
And I hope you'll forgive me for talking about him so much, but it's still on my
mind.
Daily. But it felt really good in those days after to go out for a run. Mm-hmm. Just the idea. I enjoy the solitude of running, first of all. But it also just gives you time to just kind of process the crazy thoughts that run through your head. And it's so underrated.
Yeah.
So good for Richard for pointing that out.
For sure.
Exercise in general is a good way to work on your mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know what else it's good for? If I have a problem at home that I can't find a solution to, sometimes I go for a run, and that's where the solution hits me. While I'm out on a run, and my mind is kind of cleared up, and I'm not staring at it, and boom, I'm like, oh, I hadn't thought about this.
Exercise in general, running, whatever it is you do, is probably the best and the cheapest antidepressant there is out there.
Amen.
Now, again, we always preface this by saying some people need it, but I'm convinced a lot of people don't. They just need to get out and exercise. Again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not prescribing anything here, but try it.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to try. Get out, put the headphones away, put the phone away, and just, even if you have to walk, get out there for an hour and just experience God's beauty. And you may be depressed when you get back. I don't know, but I think you'll feel a lot better.
I do too. Our trivia question from last week. Two of our favorite runners, Ryan and Sarah Hall, ran the Foot Locker Championship in the same year before they both went on to Stanford and eventual marriage. It was the year 2000. Who finished higher that year, Ryan or Sarah? And of course, when you look at their success in ensuing years, Ryan was probably, I'd say, more successful than Sarah. He was in a couple of Olympics and, you know, he's the fastest American man ever in the marathon, and he had the half marathon record for a long time, but he did not finish as high as Sarah in this race. So the answer is Sarah. That's the short answer, but here's the long answer. That was the year that you had maybe the most significant top three ever in the Foot Locker Championships on the guy's side, because you had not only Ryan Hall, but you also had Dathan Ritzenhine and Alan Webb. Now, if you don't know those names, because you don't pay that much attention, Dathan Ritzenhine was another guy who made the Olympics in the marathon a couple of times. He might have been the best cross-country runner, high school cross-country runner ever. He was a great high school cross-country runner. He won Foot Locker twice, as a matter of fact. And today he's the coach of one of the most elite programs in the world. That's the On Athletics Club. So
now, this may be a dumb question. Is that On as in On the running shoes?
Okay. Yes.
I didn't realize they had a team.
They do. Yeah. And a very good one. Jared Nagus runs for them.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And in second place that year, you had Alan Webb. Alan Webb was famous for being the record holder in the mile for years up until Yared Nuguse broke it last year. He also still holds the high school mile record. He ran 353 in high school for the mile.
Crazy.
It is crazy. I remember watching that race. If you can find it online, you can watch the race and you can just see the look on his face when he realizes what his time was. He's just flabbergasted. He's like, I can't believe I ran that fast. But it's good. And of course, we did a podcast with Alan Webb a couple of years ago. It's episode 156 if you want to go back and listen to it. He coaches now at a school called Ave Maria, which is an NAIA school down in Florida. I think they're around the Tampa area. So Ryan Hall, the fastest American marathoner of all time, only finished third in the Foot Locker Championships. And so, but what did Sarah do? Well, Sarah won Foot Locker. But here was the interesting thing about Sarah. Sarah did something that I don't think anybody ever did before. I know nobody did it before, and I don't think anybody's done it afterwards. Sarah was in dead last place at the mile marker. Now, if you're looking for her name in there, her name was Sarah Bay, B-E-I at the time. She was in dead last place at the first mile marker, and she winds up winning the race.
That's crazy.
And that's the thing we
and
know
that's
about.
That's not a little bitty race either.
No.
That's a lot of traffic to weave through.
Yeah. Well, and what we know about Sarah today is Sarah always runs smart races. Mm-hmm. She is a very smart racer. And so she was apparently born with an innate ability to be smart when she races. And this was proof of it here. So it's awesome to have a running couple like Ryan and Sarah, who they demonstrate Christian love, their Christian family values, and all of that. It's really cool to be part of the running community. They also have, if you don't know this, they have four adopted sisters from Ethiopia that are Ethiopian. Their names are Hannah, Mia, Jasmine, and Lily. They're great people, and they adopted these sisters because they're Christians, and they felt like it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And pretty neat.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
So, Dean, you can finally get to this story. I think you've had this story on the last 2 or 3 weeks podcast. Is this the one?
No, not this one. The one we're going to talk about here in a little while.
Oh, okay. Well, we've kind of gotten long-winded the past few.
We have. Like,
but it's been good.
It has
and
been
And so we've
good.
Had to skip over some story. I was thinking this was the one.
No.
But this is a great story. Jack Daniels.
Jack Daniels.
Legend.
Yeah. Yes. Legendary U.S. running coach Jack Daniels dies at the age of 92. His career spanned more than 6 decades, during which he coached dozens of Olympic distance runners and authored several books on training. The running community has lost one of its most influential figures. He was an exercise physiologist. He passed away peacefully on September 12th after watching his beloved Green Bay Packers win Thursday evening. His career spanned more than 6 decades, during which he coached elite distance runners, wrote more than 50 articles, authored several books, most famously Daniel's Running Formula. What he loved most, however, was sharing his knowledge with everyday runners, helping them find a more successful and enjoyment in the sport. He was born in 1933. He was a collegiate swimmer in the 1950s. Before earning degrees from the Colorado School of Mines and the University of Montana, double majoring in physical education and math. He went on to serve in the U.S. Army in Korea and then represented Team USA in the 1956 and 1960 Olympics, where he won a team silver and bronze in the modern pentathlon. His curiosity about human performance and how far the body could be pushed eventually led him to running. Maybe his most lasting contribution was the development of the VDOT system. And it's a practical concept to look at VO2 max and running economy and put those two things together. And it's the Daniels running formula. It has kind of defined that book. Daniels coached a wide spectrum of athletes from Joan Benoit Samuelson and Alberto Salazar to recreational joggers. He worked with more than half a dozen NCAA track programs and was hired by Sports Canada in the 1970s as a researcher before joining Nike in the 1980s in a similar role, helping athletes like Benoit Samuelson prepare for the 1984 Los Angeles Olympics, where she won gold in the first women's Olympic marathon. Quote, simply put, I love to coach both young ladies and young men, and to be able to continue doing what makes life really enjoyable for me, I truly get as much enjoyment out of watching a young runner improve his or her performance as I get from seeing one of my runners make it to the Olympics. He was a great coach. Maybe one of the best things about him was how much he cared about all athletes, not just those elite folks. Now, he was involved with some of those elite folks, but he loved watching a high school athlete run a PR in the mile just as much as he loved watching Joan Benoit Samuelson win a Olympic gold medal. I mean,
it's funny, you know, we've used the VDOT calculator for years.
That's right.
With setting up training zones and things like that. And it was, especially when it was the young kids and the parents would be like, you know, how'd you come up with that? And you'd say, Jack Daniels. And they would look at you like you had three heads. But no, I mean, he really revolutionized the training principles, really,
yeah,
of the sport of running in recent, you know, decades.
And a lot of the principles that he espouses and is in his book are principles that were around before he was around, actually.
He put them, there's a lot of people that do this, even what we do.
Yes.
The principles of running is not a new thing. We put them in a package that's easily digestible.
That's
and that's
exactly
what he
right.
did. He made it to where I could understand.
That's right.
Because so many coaches nowadays, you just go cross-eyed
yeah.
when they're talking. And it's, I say this all the time. I say this about every area of my life. You know, let's boil it down to simplicity.
Yep.
We don't need to complicate it. We don't. But a lot of people, to your point in your notes, they feel like they need to complicate it to justify what, you know, their fee might be.
Well, that's right.
I'm very open in that, you know, everything we teach in Upward Running, a lot of it you can Google. I mean,
that's
you
right.
can go Google a 5K training plan. Some people might not like me saying that, but we provide simple training plans with a community around you and the encouragement to go along with it. And that's where I feel like we really shine, is we package it all together in a simple way to help you understand it.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that if you go into your financial advisor and they start talking at you and not trying to teach you, you need to leave. They need to have the heart of the teacher. And I feel like that's what you and I are. We want everybody to grasp.
Yep.
These principles.
That's why we do Thursday Night Live. So
right.
we can
yeah. Let's break it down to mm-hmm. the simplest form and the masses can understand it. And that's what we're here for.
That's right. That's right. One of my favorite things about reading his Daniels Running Formula book, and it's a book that I still use regularly, is that it made me realize that my high school coach, first of all, my high school coach knew what he was talking about when he did the things that he did. And then two, despite the fact that his plans in some ways are a little bit the opposite of what I like to do.
Yeah.
And we might talk about that a little bit, but I realized in looking at this that my knowledge of building training plans was pretty sound and pretty right. solid, looking at the way that he does things. So the idea behind Daniel's plan, my philosophy in training is that you work from, you build a base, mm-hmm. you build endurance, and then you work on speed last.
Right.
He does the opposite.
Right.
He works on speed first and then works toward better endurance. And both can be correct.
Sure.
Both can be used and both can be successful. The point is that you have to do it kind of one way or the other. You have to train a system at a time.
And they need to be separate. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's yes, there's major building blocks. There's base, there's build or strength or whatever you want to call it, endurance, and there's speed. And I think we all agree base needs to be at the bottom. Base has got to be the first thing. Otherwise, you're going to wind up hurt.
Yep.
But how you stack those blocks, yeah, I mean, you and I have debated that through the years.
Yeah.
And there's really no, I can't say there's an ironclad. But what he illustrated was that you got to have two separate times of doing two separate things. Probably the most important thing is you got to have varied workouts.
Yep.
If you just go out and run the same pace every day at the same speed, you're never going to get faster.
That's right.
And that's where the whole VDOT calculator and calculating different zones really comes in handy.
Well, the other thing that Jack Daniels might have been first in was talking about appropriate effort.
Mm-hmm.
He was very big on don't go harder than you have to in training to get the results that you need to have. And that's a lesson that I've seen a lot of athletes that need to
eat. Yeah, because the opposing side of what I just said is if you go out and you go wide open all the time, which there are a lot of people do that,
yep.
You're never going to get faster. In fact, you're probably going to wind up hurt
yep.
and sidelined and True. Get slower as a result.
Yep. Anyway, we lost a good one with Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
So sad that he's gone, but we're glad we had him when we did.
Sure.
Well, this week's story is an interesting one. I think it's going to make you think a little bit how you view your relationship with God. It comes from a lady named Tara Tanner, and it is called When We Sell Ourselves Short, We Sell God Short. Several years ago, I embarked on a fitness goal to run a 5K. I wasn't sure where to start, so I just started where I thought it made sense. I put on my old running shoes and went out the door. I ran for a solid 20 seconds. Solid. It was ridiculous, but with my goal in mind, I didn't quit. I came home from my first run, walk, and researched how to run a 5K. I found a running plan, put on my shoes religiously every day, and followed the plan. For 7 months, my 20-second run turned into the ability to run for 2 minutes, then five, then seven. You get the idea. I was gaining confidence. I was thrilled. That day I ran for 20 minutes straight was a proud day. I thought I was ready to run a race, but I didn't know of any, and I didn't know where to find one. I had no connections to real runners, yet I was ready and determined. In my efforts to find a race to run, I somehow ended up coordinating a race. So as I continued my own running plan, I began preparing to put a race together. Well, one of my preparation ideas was to visit another race to observe and ask questions to gain better understanding of what I had gotten myself into. As that race was about to begin, I immediately noticed how it seemed like everyone was fit. I noticed that they had perfect running outfits, top-of-the-line running shoes, fancy watches, and the latest technology and headphones. They even stretched while preparing to run. So I did what anyone would do in that situation. I began to doubt myself. They lined up. I talked down to myself. They took off. I compared myself. As I saw the first runner heading to the finish line, I was shocked at his time, and that was it. I gave up. Mentally defeated, I determined two things. I didn't belong there, and there was no way I was running a race. Galatians 5:7 says, "You are running a good race. Who cut in on you to keep you from obeying the truth?" Pause. Self-doubt is deadly, isn't it? The words I think and say to myself can keep me from the Lord. They can be heavy and weigh me down. They can keep me from the truth. They can keep me consumed with thoughts of myself and leave little room in my thoughts for Him. That's pride. That's sin. And I was determined to turn from it. So I run. I choose to listen to the voice of truth. It shouts louder than my insecurities, keeps me humble, and keeps me focused on the race that is set out before me. I choose to believe who God says I am. I choose Jesus. I choose to run my race. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set out before us. Hebrews 12:1. I used to think that pride was puffing myself up, but God has revealed this truth to me. Looking inward for confidence instead of upward is pride. My pride has caused me to compare and doubt myself. It has caused me to give up what God has called me to do. It has caused me to believe lies. But the truth is, if we look upward, trusting and believing who God says we are, and allow Him to be our strength, all things are possible.
Man, there's a lot to unpack in that story.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah, this idea, I love this definition. Yeah. Pride is looking inward for confidence instead of upward.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Lot to unpack there. I mean, it is. Yeah, it's so often we do that. We limit what God can do based on what we think we can do.
Yep.
And I've never looked at it as pride, but that's so true.
It is
exactly what it is.
Yeah, totally. Yep. And of course, she talks about listening to the voice of truth here. And that is such a huge, huge issue today in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I remember 15 years ago or so, there was a guy in my Sunday school class who used to bring this up all the time, that he thought, as a country, we're headed in the wrong direction because we just don't pay enough attention to truth anymore. And I thought at the time, I thought he was being hyperbolic.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to today, and it turns out he was being prophetic is what he was. And I have come to think and to realize that I think a good portion of what is causing so much division in our society these days is that we don't think truth is important. And I say that, and everybody says, oh, why? Everybody thinks truth is important. Do they? Do they really? We're all entitled to our own opinions, for sure.
Well, let me push back just a little bit on that.
Yeah.
Because I think we think truth is important. But I think we don't think letting others know what truth is important. Because I feel like as a society, like, because I fall into this, and you probably fall into this too. I look at society and I look at some grievance that's going on. You probably less than me, because you're pretty vocal. But we see an injustice, or we know what's true. But we never, and God may be convicting us to say something or to go to a person and say, hey, but we shrink back,
mm-hmm.
kind of to tell a story here, because there's something in our lives that has kind of kicked our confidence out, or we don't want to get involved, or it's none of our business. I don't think it's that we don't know truth is necessary. It's we don't see the need, or we shrink back from the need to go out and let that truth be known. And so what has happened, and I think I've talked about this on here before, of if you look over just since I've been alive, that truth went from paramount to, okay, we're going to go against truth, to, okay, we're proud that we're bucking the system, we're going against the biblical worldviews, to today we have a whole generation of people that they don't even know the truth.
Yeah.
We have young people, and you see them, and we're not going to go into the details of, but you see them. You see these people out there, and it can enrage me. But when I really step back and I pray about it, you start to have compassion on these people because they don't even know.
It's true.
The truth. And what really steps on my toes is, whose fault is that?
I've been saying it for years.
It's ours.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
And so where I was pushing back was, I think we know the truth. We're just, as a faith community, as a Christian community, as a body of believers, we haven't put it as a priority.
Well, and you're right. You're dead on 100% right. It's worse than that, though.
because I have, over the last week, I have listened to a number of pastors, these are people in the church, say some unbelievably horrendous things. I listened to one person who calls themselves a pastor, and I know that sounds terrible to say that like that, but that person said that she thought the letters of Paul were a little, she was going to deconstruct the letters of Paul because they were not all the Bible is reasonable to take. And it's like, come, really? I mean, I've heard some terrible, terrible things. And the truth is that in the pulpit, in a lot of our pulpits, there are things being said that are anti-biblical. And maybe that's always been true, but it's become bolder and bolder. And maybe you're right. Maybe part of it is just that we're not vocal enough in, I mean, there ought to be a large Christian community saying, no, that's not right.
Well, and this is where I really get convicted. I think it's hard to use the word vocal now, because to me that indicates people taking to social media and saying you're wrong. And the most effective way, hands down, and it's the way that takes the most courage and it's the most uncomfortable, is to go to that person.
Yeah.
Because shouting somebody down on social media, and I'm throwing mud at both sides here. I'm throwing mud at the church on this.
Sure.
Get off of social media and go to that person. It's not effective. You are not effective taking to social media and even if you're right, even if you're 100% right, it's not effective.
That's correct.
And it's not biblical.
That's right.
How to go to scripture and read about how to deal with conflict. You're not going to find Facebook in there.
That's
you're going to find a difficult, hard, face-to-face, in-person, one-on-one conversation. 9 times out of 10, that will come to a good resolution. Not always. I'm not going to say it always will, but it's always going to be a better resolution than a keyboard warrior.
That's
and
sure.
And I have to say, I've done it.
Absolutely.
And so I'm not throwing stones here, but
yeah.
Yeah, truth is important, but we need to get back to knee-to-knee, face-to-face conversations.
For sure. Galatians 5:7, you ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth?
I don't know why I had this example last night or this morning when I was going through this. I think perfection can often hinder us from obeying the truth. We think we have to be perfect, and if we're not perfect, we just go off the rails. And I'm comparing this to my, again, we're not going to get into the details of my health journey, but I've been doing well. And what I've had to learn is that you have to give yourself grace. And so last night, there's this place up the road, up above you, that has a deep dish pizza, the Gray Flower Deli. Incredible. And so we went there last night, and in years past, I would have looked at eating that pizza. I mean, it was just pizza. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's not what I've been trying to do.
Right.
I would have looked at that as I messed up. Oh, man, it's just I blew it. And things go off the rails. I mean, we do this in our walk with Christ.
Yeah.
We have this sin, and we're like, oh, just forget it. It's not worth it. And we go off the rails. Well, what I've learned to do now is I've learned to take going into that restaurant last night. I went into it with, okay, this is going to be an experiment. I'm going to eat this, and then I'm going to see how I sleep tonight.
Yep. Didn't go well.
It didn't. And at the end of the day, I'm convinced sleep is, for me, for sure, it's based on how you eat.
Yeah.
But I went into it with an open mind, with grace, because we're not perfect people, but we try to put this standard on ourselves that we have to be perfect, and that's not reality. And if we put an unrealistic expectation on our life, on our diet, on our training, on whatever it is. If we go into it with rose-colored glasses and unrealistic expectations, that's going to be the hindrance that I believe it talks about in Galatians.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Let me hit it from a different angle.
Yep.
So it reminds me of people who let everything get in the way of their performance from a running standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
These people who, you know, their workout starts to go south or their race starts to go south, and they start to think of all the things they didn't do right. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know what? I didn't drink enough water yesterday. No wonder I'm crashing and burning right now.
Didn't get enough sleep last night.
Didn't get enough sleep. Whatever it is, they're going to bring up some. Instead of fighting through that thing mm-hmm. and trying to get on the other side of it and realizing it's just one little thing, they let that thing derail them mm-hmm. because it gets in their mind and they can't get it out of their mind. And we've seen that so many times.
The moment you give it a voice,
that's right,
it's going to take you down.
That's right. Yep.
It's not saying you shouldn't. It's not saying you're never going to think it, so don't let that derail you.
Yeah.
We're going to have these thoughts. Are you going to give that thought a voice?
Yep.
And if you do, it's going to take you out.
That's right. 2 Corinthians 10:12. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise.
A tongue twister.
It is. But what's important about this is there is only one standard. Mm-hmm. And we get confused with that a lot of times. And if we're comparing ourselves to anyone else other than God and God's standard, we're messing up. Mm-hmm. But plain and simple, doesn't matter whether we're talking about running or we're talking about our faith or we're talking about our kids or we're talking about whatever. Mm-hmm. If we're comparing ourselves to anything but God's standard, we're messing up. And here's the thing about God's standard. God tells us that we have all sinned and we all have issues and we all have problems and none of us are perfect. And so that realization, I think, is important. But it's also important to recognize the good side mm-hmm. of that equation, too, and what God is for us. Again, I am astounded at the number of anti-biblical things that are promoted these days by mainstream organizations mm-hmm. and people because nobody wants to feel bad comparing themselves to others. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Nobody likes to feel bad, mm-hmm. but we need to recognize the truth. Back to that whole truth thing, and what the Bible tells us, and that God provided a remedy for all of those things. But we have to be realistic about them. We don't come to Jesus by saying, "Jesus, I'm a great person, so you know, forgive me." Well, you would forgive me if there was something to forgive me for. God, please, I'm not a good person, and I need your forgiveness, and I need your, and that's the way we have to go to them. And a lot of times we don't do that. And as it relates to running, of course, we have to quit comparing ourselves mm-hmm. to others. That's crazy. And I know people look at that and they go, "Well, Dean, that's easy for you to say. When you compare yourself to runners, it's usually a pretty positive mm-hmm. comparison." And I get it. But there's a lot of things in my life that I'm not very good at. And when I compare myself to others in other areas, I don't fare so well. But I shouldn't. The thing is I can always look back at the things I am good at and the things that God did give me to be good at. And everybody out there has something like that, right?
Mm, that's a good word, Dean.
Matthew 23:12, and whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. This kind of goes back to what she was saying about the definition of pride, you know, looking inward for confidence instead of upward. It's funny because this, basically, this is saying God's smarter than us and we're not smarter than God. And nobody would say out loud, "Well, I'm smarter than God." No, mm-hmm. Nobody would say that. And yet our actions show something completely different. And so
it's what we say and what we do. It's not one or the other. It's and or, and it's and both of those things. And I think that's important for us to recognize. To your point earlier, I think this is one of those verses that can be really easily misconstrued. Being humble does not necessarily mean being quiet or taking a back seat to things, because I think a lot of people mistake being humble for doing what you were talking about a little while ago, for hearing somebody espouse some terrible things and then not speaking up because I don't want to put, I don't want to give my two cents.
That's cowardly.
On that thing. Yes.
That's coward.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true.
Humble to me is a picture of strength.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Meekness, humbleness. It's a picture of strength.
Yeah.
But we're kind of told in today's society that if you speak out, then you're not being humble. That's oil and water there.
Yeah, that's not biblical. Now we need to be respectful to others. When we disagree and when we need to bring something up, we need to do it in a way that is respectful. But we got to stand firm.
Yeah, that's a good point. It really comes down to the way you do it. Yeah. If you take it to social media, that's arrogance. If you take it to the person face to face, that can be done in a very humble spirit. So yeah, that's a good point. The way you do it makes all the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. What pride do you need to lay aside in order to run your race? This one hit me pretty directly because I think lately, I'm at that age. I just turned 60. I'm slowing down. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. At some point in time, you're going to slow down. And I'm getting slower. And I know that a lot of people look at that and go, oh, I'm so sorry that you're having trouble breaking 18 minutes as a 60-year-old. I feel real sorry for you. You know what I mean? I get how that sounds, but that's kind of the point. I need to lay this aside because my pride tells me that I'm not like everybody else. I don't have to deal with this normal course of human biology that everybody else has to deal with, right? And so I think everybody that's in my boat running the way that I run they all think the same thing. Man, I hate to be slowing down, but it's something that we have to accept and we have to lay that aside. I have to lay that aside and still be thankful for the fact that I can run, for the fact that I can still run well. It's just maybe not as well. And that's a constant the thing about this, laying aside your pride, is that this isn't a one-time thing. Mm-hmm. This isn't
it's a daily. Yeah.
That's right. It's not a thing I do. Okay. I've said that I'm going to lay this aside. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. Right. And then tomorrow the thought comes back and I got to lay it aside again.
Yeah, I think the question is a little misplaced because it indicates what pride. It would indicate that, okay, some pride you don't need to lay aside. But the answer to the question is all of it. Every day. Always. And kind of to Tara's story, it really stepped on my toes because I'll be honest, I've just never thought about it the way she framed it. I mean, there's something God's working on me right now, and he's saying, do this. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. That doesn't make sense. And I don't know if I can pull that off. That'd be a train wreck. That will fail because I don't know what I'm doing. That's exactly what God wants you to do.
Yeah.
Those are the things that God wants you to do. Because what her story really illustrated in me is that me making those statements, which are honest statements that I'm making right now, that's pride.
Yeah.
That's me basing everything on what Mitchell can do. God's calling me to do something that's very uncomfortable. And it doesn't make sense. And it will go down in a blaze of glory if he's not involved.
That's right.
That's me putting the brakes on because of those statements, is sin. That's what her story said to me.
Yeah.
And Tara, thanks for that. I mean, it really, I've never, as long as we've been doing this, I've never thought about those questions that we like to say, oh, it's just questions, it's planning. You got to get this stuff right. And no, I mean, I think back to the story of when we started this whole thing.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. It would have failed if it was up to me or to me and you. It would fail today if it was completely on mine and your shoulders or on upward shoulders or on.
Yeah.
But God's driving this train and he doesn't derail.
That's right. You know, I've thought a lot, again, bring up the Charlie Kirk thing again. There, I have a lot of feelings about that. And I have a lot of what I would call righteous anger about the what has happened and the things that have happened since then are just, to me, they're just as crazy as what actually happened. It's crazy. And here's the thing is I want to lash out.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to lash out, but I have to keep holding myself back. And this isn't the same thing as what we were talking about earlier. Now, here's the question. Am I right about what I think? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I feel confident that I'm right. But what I need to find is I need to find God's direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's what you do next.
Right. It's what is God's direction with what I feel? And that's really important. And here's what happens with when we get in this position where we have this thing, we have this feeling inside of us that is not really the way God maybe wants us to feel. It gets between us and our relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes things less clear with him. And you have to lay that aside. You have to lay that pride of being right aside long enough to be able to listen to God's voice and hear his voice. I don't know. That was my thought on this thing.
No, you're dead on.
Was there a time when you compared yourself to others and were afraid to do something?
All the time.
I remember one time in particular that you were involved because I was training for the Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hate swimming with a passion. And I'm not a good swimmer. And I'm really better than that. I'm a poor swimmer. And you're a pretty good swimmer. And so you said to me one day, you were going up to Chattanooga to swim in the Tennessee River.
Mm-hmm.
And you said to me, you said, you really need to do some open water swimming because I hadn't done any to that point. I was just swimming in a pool because it's a lot different than swimming in a pool. And in my gut, I knew you were right, but I did not want to go up there. I did not want to go at all because all I'm thinking about is I don't need to go swim with you. I can't swim with you. And there's going to be other people up there and they're probably all going to be better than me. And I didn't even know if I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, we got there. And in the first 30 seconds, it was all coming true. It was all coming unraveled. The world was ending for me in that moment. But then calmer heads prevailed. And
let me give you a little grace in that story. Because, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about that morning. Where I failed you as a friend is I didn't say, hey, Dean, you haven't done any open water swimming. Let's go to Chickamauga Lake during the daytime and let's practice open water swimming. No, I took you to the Tennessee River to swim upstream before daylight.
That's true.
Probably the most scary circumstance. I mean, that's scary even for a seasoned swimmer because you don't know what's below you in the Tennessee River. So give yourself a little grace. That was kind of the most extreme. I mean, the only thing that could have made that more extreme would be there were sharks swimming below us.
But the good thing is that if I could get through that.
Yeah.
And that's the way that's the way we should look at stuff.
Never mind all that. That's what I was thinking.
If I could get through that, then I could swim open water anywhere. Honestly.
Absolutely.
Honestly. Yeah. And so I did. And I did. And
And you know, here's the thing is after we got through, was I glad I had done it? 100%. I was so glad that I went. For the first 30 seconds, I was not glad I was there.
I will never forget. I kind of picked my head up to see how you were doing. And I guess maybe the goggles were magnifying your eyes a little bit, but your eyes looked bigger than the goggles. And I was like, he's panicking. But you, I mean, you put your head down and you got right through it. I'm still waiting on your next Ironman.
Not until you and what was the guy's
Andy.
Name? Yeah, Andy. We're like, calm down. You're beating the heck out of the water.
just you were calm fighting down. It.
So, if you're a slower runner too, I say this because I see I'm on the other side of this thing often as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of the faster runners. And so when somebody's a slower runner, I can hear them comparing themselves to me. And just like you weren't looking down on me, you were trying to help me. Mm-hmm. And if somebody comes and they run with me, I'm trying to help. I'm not looking down.
Sure.
And we need to realize that when we go comparing ourselves to others is that most of the time there's no reason because they're not looking down on us.
Yeah.
Last question. Who has hindered you from continuing your race?
My comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
It's usually what it is.
That's
we get comfortable and we're like, you know, we have this idea in our society. It kind of comes along with the whole idea of retirement. You know, retirement is really a new thing in the history of mankind. The idea of we're going to get to a point and we're just going to coast. We're just not going to do anything. It's not biblical.
I hadn't thought about that.
And we all have this innate desire to get comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at every other society that doesn't strive for that. Look at the Blue Zones.
Mm-hmm.
They don't strive for that.
Yeah.
They do hard things all the time, and it makes them better humans, and it makes them live to over 100 years old. But the whole idea of our comfort zone, finding comfort, to me, that shouldn't be our goal. That's kind of weird to say because I want to retire one day. Even though I say I'll never retire, I have this dream of being a greeter at Lowe's. I want to do that one day.
Yeah.
I think that is the coolest job of working in a hardware store and talking about tools and wood. And but I think the idea of doing things to get comfortable, it's not the best advice.
Yeah.
Especially not in our walk with Christ. God, that's why we have a t-shirt that says, find your comfort zone and leave it.
Yeah.
God wants you uncomfortable because you only have one person to rely on when you're outside your comfort zone, and that's Him.
That's right. I heard something the other day that I had never considered before. Biblical. Daniel. Do you know how old Daniel was when he was in the lion's den?
I don't.
He was at least 82, from what I understand. I never thought about Daniel being old when he was there. That struck me as being, and I hope I'm not crossing that up with another story. I think that's right. But man, God doesn't want us to stop. Daniel was 82 at a time when people didn't live to be 82.
I mean, in Daniel's day, there was, I'm 65.
Yeah.
Checking out.
Yeah.
I really don't understand that because everybody I know that just, especially if they go home and just sit, their days are numbered.
That is true. Seen it over and over.
Yeah, I mean, retiring from a particular job, okay, I get that.
Yep.
But don't ever stop.
Yep.
Keep going. Our work, because we do this, I see this in the church. It's like people retire, and it's like you don't see them at church anymore. It's like, so you retired from church too?
Oh, that's crazy.
And But that's a mentality that I don't think is healthy.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Stay outside your comfort zone.
Amen.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. This is the story that we've been trying to get to for 3 weeks. Yeah. So this comes from the BBC, and it says, I'm running a marathon in every city in England. So this man named Adam Rodriguez, he's 29 years old, lives in Langport, Somerset, began his 55 marathon challenge on the 5th of July in Hereford, and will complete his mum's hometown of Salisbury in Wiltshire next June. So this guy had his mother had cancer several years ago. So he's raising money for Move Against Cancer, which supports people impacted by the disease to exercise to help improve outcomes. He says, I'm doing this challenge to see every corner of England, to test both my body and my mind, and to embrace the adventure that comes with pushing beyond comfort. One marathon, one city, and one story at a time. And he explained that his mother was diagnosed with B-cell lymphoma that spread across multiple parts of her body. And he says, whilst she survived, the journey tested every part of our family, a reminder of the quiet, relentless strength it takes to face cancer, not just for those diagnosed, but for everyone who loves them. I wanted to do something that helps the fight against cancer, he said. So that's what he's doing. He is running, and he's going to run a marathon in every, I don't know if this is every big city or if there are only 55 cities in
England.
There's
only 55 because I Googled it.
Is that right?
I thought there was a lot more cities in England, but no, there's 55.
There's a lot more cities in the state of Georgia because I Googled that and I don't remember what it was, but it was like 400 and something.
I mean, there's like 8 in Whitfield County.
Yeah. So different world, I guess. But it's a pretty cool thing to do. He hopes to raise £10,000 for this charity. And his mother says she's very proud of him. She's fully recovered now. So kind of a pretty neat thing. And we've seen a lot of these stories lately over the past 6 months or so of people doing these strange kind of ultra running kind of things that are pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. Like I'm still ready for the 50 states in 50 days thing. Just whatever.
I'm ready when you are.
We can get some financing for that. So if you're out there, we're looking for it.
Do you have any idea what that would cost?
I don't.
We need to put a budget number to it.
Yeah.
And say
figure out how much
this is what it would cost. Because part of me thinks it would be very expensive, and then part of me thinks it wouldn't be that expensive. I don't know.
It's 2 months worth of living expenses.
Yeah. And transportation.
If we had a van or something that we could live in, and go from place to place, that would save a lot of money.
Or if you've got a big Prevost RV, that would be nice too.
Yeah, something like
that. You can go with us.
Absolutely,
you want to be the bus driver
for sure.
That would be pretty epic.
Yeah, surely there's somebody who goes and tailgates at football games with one of those big campers that has one of those things that they could use for 2 months to drive us around and do this.
Mm-hmm.
You would think there's somebody out there that could do that. My goodness.
Come out of retirement that we just talked about.
That's right. That's right. All right. It's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, sometimes I think we get so caught up in the routine that we miss the special things that could be around us every day. In order for us to take advantage of opportunity, we have to see it. And we may not be seeing it if we're not looking for it. This is called seeing opportunity in every step. Here's a question for us. Do we recognize opportunity when it appears? How often do we miss an opportunity simply because we're not looking for it? We all face familiar struggles, inner doubts, and missed moments in our fitness journeys. Think of an average runner preparing for a local race. She isn't aiming for a podium spot or a viral fame. Instead, her goals are personal things like finishing, improvement, community, and enjoyment. But what if, before stepping onto the course, she's convinced there are no special moments for her? That every race will be just another slog, nothing to celebrate and lacking any semblance of opportunity for something precious. If this mindset prevails, she'll miss the friendships offered at the starting line, the joy of a perfect weather day, or the subtle chance to encourage a fellow struggler along the route. Opportunities are not always obvious. They often require thought and vision to see them. It may take a surprising surge of energy at mile 3, a discovery that a new pacing strategy works, or a heartfelt conversation on a group run to spot the value that's right in front of us. Suppose we have decided beforehand there aren't any opportunities, that we can't see any way to improve, no chance for inspiration, or no hidden blessings. Even the punch you in the face obvious moments like a friend calling out your name or a fleeting sense of runner's high or even a new PR will pass by unnoticed. It's only by adjusting our perspective, looking hard, and believing there is something more to each run and each day that we can see what's possible. Like faith, running well means you must first believe opportunity is there. Hebrews urges us to run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus. Endurance, when combined with expectation, open both spiritual and practical doors, even to those who feel ordinary or average. The average runner refines her strategy over time. She learns to seek the most beneficial training plans, to rejoice in small improvements, and to adapt when plans don't go as expected. And it works that way in our Christian faith, too. 1 Timothy 6:12 tells us to fight the good fight of faith. A fighter is strategic, always looking to seek a weakness, adjust their plan, and persist even when someone is swinging at them. Within our faith, that means being strategic, adjusting to avoid the evil one's predations as he tries to exploit our weaknesses. It means adjusting, not just when we know we're in a battle, but when we least expect it. We must look for opportunities for ourselves, but we have to avoid the opportunistic opposition too. Winning in running and faith is a mindset. It means showing up, searching for meaning, and refusing to let defeat or the feeling of monotony define the outcome. Our journey becomes extraordinary when we choose to see, moment by moment, how each step can be filled with divine opportunity. Even when we're not the fastest, we can find meaning in the crowd, the shared experience, and being cheered on by strangers. The running community is supportive and united, which mirrors Christian fellowship and in turn binds believers in encouragement, accountability, and hope. When others are limping, struggling, or doubting, we remember that our race isn't always about personal achievement or temporary goals. It's about aligning our lives with God's eternal purposes. Every runner has the chance to be surprised by possibility if she looks for it, expects it, and adjusts her vision to see beyond the ordinary. And so too, every believer running the spiritual race must embrace the people that find opportunity. They have to think that way. Thus, the story of an average runner becomes a model for Christian opportunity. It is the humble, hope-filled search, the perseverance through middling moments, and the belief that every race and every day holds new blessings for those who seek them in faith.
It's a good story, Dean.
Yeah, I don't know if I did a great job explaining what I meant this. After getting through, I was like, I just think more simple. We just miss opportunities in everyday life because we get dialed in on what we've always done. Mm-hmm. We get through these routines, and we're both guilty mm-hmm. of having routines and being involved in routine. But I think that's why this appealed to me so much. You know, Debbie tells me that I don't notice anything around me, and part of that is why I think I'm a successful runner. Because I'm so myopic, I can be so tunnel vision that I don't pay attention to all the things that don't matter. I only pay attention to that finish line. And that's a good thing. Being hyper-focused can be a good thing, but it can also get in the way too.
Sure.
and you can miss important things. I don't know how many times, you know, driving in a car somewhere and somebody says, oh, did you see that deer? No, I was looking at the road.
Or let's go look at X, and you're like, no, we the GPS says we're going to be home at this time.
Yeah.
And you're like, we can't mess that up.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm guilty there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, and there are things along the way, along our journey, all of our journey, that we should see and can see and are great things if we'll just open our eyes.
You know, I still tell my boys, you know, I think goals, we can get so hyper-focused on goals that it becomes a bad thing. You know, I remember many conversations with my boys talking about, you know, it's important to have a big old hairy goal that scares you to death, that mm-hmm. you just kind of think this is going to be tough. And it's okay to be laser focused on that goal. But the thing about goals is that if you're striving for that big goal, you need to be aware of the doors that may open because you're striving for that goal.
Yeah.
And the goal may wind up being something adjacent to that goal. But I think so many times we have this picture in our head of what this is exactly what it's going to look like 10 years from now. And it's okay. That is a good perspective to have. But don't be so focused on it that, you know, a 1 degree shift right now 10 years from now is a big change. Mm-hmm. And I think so many times God is trying to get our attention. I'm thinking about your story right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he was dropping these little hints mm-hmm. 10, 12 years ago, and you were like, eh, and he kind of forced your hand.
Yeah.
But because you had this picture in your head of what Dean's life is going to look like in 15 years, and that is a good thing to have. Don't hear me say goals aren't good. Goals are necessary and they're good and everybody should have them. But to the point of your story, leave room for that door to open.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's you may have this picture. You may be a young person. You're thinking, I have this job all figured out. I know exactly what my life's going to look like 20 years from now. And I'm going to be a great whatever that is. You know, let's say it's an accountant. I'm going to be a great accountant. Well, and you're going to school and you're doing everything you need to become that great accountant. Well, sometimes that door may open and God may want you to be a great doctor. And it can be a very minor shift now, but if we miss that door, we may have these rose-colored glasses that goal is out there to be achieved when that's not God's plan. God's plan was you kind of missed the turn.
Yeah. You know who I can't help but think about? I can't help but think about Charlie Kirk. You know, I don't know if you know this story, but Charlie Kirk wanted to go to West Point.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And that was his goal. What his life looked like to him was, I'm going to go to West Point and I'm going to graduate with this college degree. And he didn't get in. Yeah. They turned him down.
Yeah.
And instead of getting upset and worked up about that, he started this thing that became huge, a huge thing.
And that was not on his radar.
No.
I've never heard him say that, but West Point was on his radar.
That's right.
But he was, I mean, that could have crushed him. He could have allowed not getting into West Point. He could have questioned God, you know, God, what is this? All those things.
He could have said, it's not fair. It's not right. My grades were good enough.
But he looked to the right. And there was a door cracked.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, I wonder what that is.
And he busted through it.
Yeah. And we need to be prepared for those moments.
For sure. And, you know, this also goes back to kind of positive versus negative thinking too.
Yeah.
To me. Because the more positive you are, this is so true. The more positive you are, the more opportunity you will see. Period. Full stop. If you are positive in the way that you handle things and the way that you proceed, you're going to notice positive things. But if you're negative all the time, all you're going to see is negativity around you.
Yeah, and this is not prosperity gospel stuff here. This is just common sense.
That's right. That's right. Yep. And I'm not talking about kidding yourself. I'm not talking about, looking through rose-colored glasses and making things out to be better than they are or anything like that. I'm just talking about being positive about things in general. And that goes to every area of our life. And if you will do that, you will see more opportunity. You will not miss nearly as many things as you do if you're negative.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today.
Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. Runners truly wish well on their rivals. I love this about runners. You know, the world championships are on right now as we record this. As a matter of fact, Sydney McLaughlin or Lavroni may have a world record right now for all we know.
I already know.
Yeah, well.
I'm not going to tell you, though. You mean I know something before you know something?
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
But anyway, it's on right now, and there were two guys. This was a cool story. There are two guys running the 3,000-meter steeplechase, and this was a qualifying race, and they both fell while going over barriers. So one guy was a Belgian guy named Tim Vandeveld, and he was just about to approach the finish line, he looks behind him to see the other guy that had fallen, and the other guy was really struggling. I mean, he was limping really, really bad. And so this guy turns around, kind of puts his arm around this Colombian guy named Carlos San Martin, and they just kind of limp to the finish line together. Hmm. And I just think it was a cool moment. Neither one of the guys. Now, here's the thing. Some people will look at that and go, well, what about all those other people? Why didn't they do what he did? Those other people were focused on their job and qualifying for the finals, and there's nothing wrong with what they were doing.
Sure.
But this is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Same thing we're just talking about. He had an opportunity to go back. His race was done. He wasn't going to qualify. He wasn't worried about his time. He had an opportunity to do something else. And sure. He saw it and he took it, and good for him. It was a beautiful moment. And again, my larger point is that runners in general are people who support one another. And I think that's a cool thing about our sport. When Faith Kipyegon won the 1500 meters, which she has done, what, I don't know, 5 or 6 championships in a row. It's like it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But when they panned over to Beatrice Chebet, who herself won the 5K and 10K in the last Olympics and has everything to be excited about for herself, you would have thought Faith Kipyegon just won her first championship ever.
Yeah.
She was so excited about it. And that's neat to see.
It really is a cool community.
Yeah. I guess it's world championship time, so just some things to notice about this world championships. Faith Kipyegon is the best middle distance runner of all time. Men, women, everybody, all together. She's incredible. I don't know. I didn't even look up how many championships she's won, but she just never loses. And there were some good runners in this race, and they can't run with her. She's so good. And she has a great disposition as well. Cole Hocker, do you see what happened to Cole Hocker?
No.
The Olympic champion didn't qualify. Well, he would have qualified, but he got DQ'd. He got down to the last straightaway, and he was boxed in, and he kind of tried to weave between two guys, and he kind of hit one of them as he was going through.
Oh, wow.
And they DQ'd him. Whether he should have been DQ'd or not, there's cases to be made on both sides, but they did DQ him, so he didn't make it to the finals of the 1500. That was a shocker. The Cole Hocker shocker. Cooper Lutkenhouse, the high school kid that we've talked about here, the young guy, he didn't qualify, but man, it was so cool to see him. His eyes were so big while he was there at the World Championships. It was fun to see. I'm sure he learned a great lesson. That was cool. Beatrice Chebet, I just mentioned, she's incredible. She won that 10K like it was no big deal. She's incredible to watch and neat to watch. This was interesting. So the marathon and the 100 meters were on the same day. The 100 meters final and the marathon final were on the same day. The marathon finish was closer than the 100 meters finish.
Really?
Yes. There was like a hundredth of a second in the marathon. It was the most fun to watch. And it finished on the track. So it looked like a track race.
Yeah.
But these two guys had just finished running a marathon. And here they come down to the finish line. And it's just back and forth.
So that's interesting. So I wonder, in comparison to the people that won the 100 meters, what was the finish time? Because the marathon, you say, come down to 100 meter dash, basically.
Yeah.
What was their time in the last 100?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I bet it's not as far big a difference as you would think. I mean, yeah. If you understand track running, it's a lot. But
yeah.
It's probably, what, a couple seconds, maybe?
I'd say they probably ran between 13 and 14 seconds.
Okay.
Maybe 14 seconds.
And the world standard for
10 seconds, roughly.
So, four seconds.
Yeah. That's. Well, Noah got humbled. I know a lot of people are Noah haters. There's also a lot of Noah lovers.
Yeah.
Noah's a very flamboyant guy, but he wound up finishing third. And he might have not even been on the podium if Tobogo hadn't false started. The Jamaicans, Oblique Seville and Kashane Thompson went 1-2. Noah gets third, but he was very gracious in his loss.
Really?
Yes.
Good.
He was, and it was good to see. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be running against him in the 200 at this point, because he will win the 200.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see. I mentioned Sydney McLaughlin-Lavroni. Man, oh man. She's been trying to break this American record in the 400 meters for a long time. And she just kept getting close, but she didn't do it. And then when she finally did it in the qualifying rounds, she did it by a long way.
What did she run?
She ran 48.29.
Can I give commentary on what she just did that you don't even know yet?
I don't even know.
Do you want me to tell you?
I want to watch it.
Oh, okay.
I want to watch it. Don't tell me. Yeah, okay. I want to watch it. Yeah. Melissa Jefferson Wooden won the 100. That was good to see. She's been dominant all year long, and it was good to see her carry that over to a world championship. And then the 1500 meters didn't have Cole Hocker in it. It didn't have Jared Neguse in it. It didn't have Ingebrigtsen in it. And so it was a really kind of a strange final. Nobody really knew what to expect. And then Josh Kerr, there were a lot of people talking about Josh Kerr winning it. And then Josh Kerr got hurt. Apparently he had some kind of calf strain or something like that in the middle of the race, and he just pulled up kind of lame. He tried to run a little bit more, and he just couldn't run.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, a guy from Portugal winds up winning it. We've heard of him. If you know running, you may have heard of him, but not a very well-known guy.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. The last, I think, 7 1500 meter championships, world championships, but whether it's world or Olympics championships, have been won by a different person.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. Trivia question for this week. Since we're having the world championships, how about a question about track and field? In all of the throwing events, there's four different throwing events: the shot put, the discus throw, the hammer throw, and the javelin. And in all of those, the men's implement, the object that they're throwing, is heavier than the women's to try to make it fairly even. But in which of those events are the world records the closest to the same distance for both men and women? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're all different, but which one is the closest? Shot put, discus, hammer, or javelin? And if you Google that and figure it out, or if you know the answer to that, you can send it to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to send that in and have it correct, you will win $20 off in the store. Our motivational thought of the week comes from that famous person, unknown.
says, keep going. Your best run is yet to come. I love that. I don't know that I've ever heard that before. And I thought it was appropriate since we were talking about our expectations. Always be open to the idea of an amazing thing happening on your next run or your next walk. It may not be a good day. You know, it's funny. I got these new shoes and I had a an incredible week. The first week I had these shoes. And then I did this long run, and the day after the long run, I felt awful. And I was like, oh, this feels like I was feeling before I got these shoes. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, but it'll all be fine on Monday. And on Monday, I felt worse. And I was like, oh, man, I was sure hoping these shoes were the thing. But you know what? I went into Tuesday thinking.
Yeah.
I went into Tuesday thinking, nope, I'm going to feel great on Tuesday. And guess what? I felt great on Tuesday.
Your magic pixie dust shoes.
That's right. So go into every run feeling like it's going to be magic. And it might not be. And that's okay.
Right.
And if it's not, just move on and go to the next day with the same expectation. All right. Any word until we're done? We got Couch to Marathon. You can still join the Couch to Marathon that finishes at Cannonball next year.
Yep.
And you can sign up for that and be a part of that. It'll be fun.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, it will be fun.
Sunday, September the 28th is the live kickoff. I think this podcast will be out by then, right? Nope.
Right.
It'll come out on Monday.
Yeah.
So as of today,
we're in
today
the first week.
Is the start of the Couch. If you're listening to this on Monday when this podcast comes out, today's the first day of the Couch to Marathon for Cannonball.
And it's not too late. And especially if you're already a runner of some account,
sure.
You can probably start anytime in the next 12 weeks.
Yep.
So, all right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.